Hello and welcome to another episode of It Was Mooney, your source for all things movie streaming and pop culture related. I'm your host, Kosi, and I'm joined always by Wani B. And we're joined again in the studio by a good friend of the show, brother. What's up, man? Eric. What's up, man?
What's up, Kosi?
How you doing, bro? And, dude, and your steel drum that you...
We gotta show it off, y'all. We gotta show off our lack of musical talent.
Yeah. Hear that? That's for free.
That's for free, listeners.
That's all.
Soothing, nice music.
Yeah, but I want to thank Eric for just providing us with the cool steel drum, dude.
Man, it's been a while since I've been here.
And providing us with his presence, more importantly.
Yes. Actually, yes. We like you more than the steel drum.
Yeah, Eric.
Damn.
Well, that's why I brought it.
No, but we got a really good show on. We got on tap for today's show, brother.
All right, so doing a double review today.
Double.
We're doing, first of all, a retro review, 20th year anniversary, right?
Yeah, 20 years, yeah.
20 year anniversary of 40 year old virgin.
So he's a 60 year old virgin.
He's a 60. Well, he's not a virgin anymore, technically.
No, you're right. Yeah. You're right.
If actually, you've seen the movie, right.
He's a 60 year old married man.
It's a spoiler, but yes, he's a.
Yeah, spoiler alert. And then we're following up on our one shot from next week reviewing the first episode of Escape from Dannemora.
Yeah, man, it should be good. It should be good. We have a lot of thoughts on that show, so yeah. Stay tuned.
So, first of all, before we jump in real quick, start of the new year, sort of a new Eric, new Kosi, new Juan. Also, start of a new president. Any last minute thoughts on that before we sign off on the Biden era?
Man, TikTok's going away, and it feels like nothing's going to change, but I know that all the kids are just going to...
I guess Reels is just
going to
take over.
The kids are going to have to come to Instagram, which the kids don't want to do.
But, Eric, how will they afford...
They're going to some Chinese app, Red Chinese Book, app. Or some other Chinese app, a different one.
That'll be more racist sounding than that one. The Red Book's actually on safer sounding.
I guess it's a good time to get in on the ground floor with a new app.
Yeah,
I mean, that's the thing, though, is that how long is this app going to last?
Is it gonna shall see.
Look, TikTok lasted, 5 years or so? So, you know, safe to assume maybe like another...
I still feel like there's a good chance they'll either delay the ban, because Trump doesn't want the ban to happen, or they'll find somebody to buy it. Apparently, there's rumors Musk might buy it, so he can own all the social media.
Isn't like Mr. Beast like buying for it, too? Like, is that true?
There's people putting in bids. There's people trying to make a play for it. I think tomorrow's Biden's last day. I don't think we're going to see TikTok's last day be tomorrow.
It's crazy that it's the Sunday, the day of rest, is Biden's last day.
I'm pretty sure it's on purpose that inauguration is on a Monday.
No, I know. It just feels more... Because of what's coming, it feels...
One last day of peace.
Yeah, that's what it feels like. That's what it kind of feels like.
The calm before the storm.
Yeah, a little bit.
I think all seriousness, though, I still think I hope that when he gets in office, he just makes stuff better. That's his whole slogan, right? Like, make this country great again. You know, just do good. I don't think so, but again, I hope he does it. That's all I can hope for at this point.
No, I agree. I don't want to get too political with this. I hope... 4 years from now, the United States is in a better place than it is now.
Of course, man.
Does anybody think Home Alone 2 would have been better if he met Biden in the lobby instead of Trump?
It would be a lot weirder. You know what? It would be a lot weirder, actually.
No.
No.
Yeah. Even back then, Biden was kind of a boring ass dude.
Yeah, like who's this boring like senator?
You
but no.
I tried to smell his hair.
Hey, Kevin, come here for a second. Let me get
him. Hey, Kevin, get over here. I want to smell your hair.
Oh, God.
I want to smell your hair, kid. Come here.
Don't let him feed you any malarkey, kid.
Lobby's this way.
Dude, again,
Oh, man.
I do appreciate Home Alone 2, though, for Tim Curry. Tim Curry's a great villain, like, in that movie.
Hey,
he
man.
Was awesome in
hey,
that.
This Tim Curry. Is, I'm probably going to get Curry, a lot of shit for this, but Rob Schneider played Cedric. Bellhop.
Rob Schneider was
there. You're right.
Yeah,
you're right.
It was actually not a bad performance.
The tip, like, remember he asked for the tip, like, and he gave him gum.
He gave him zebra stripe gum.
You know what?
Dude, the worst gum.
That's not where that came from.
He gave him the worst goddamn gun we could give
him. You know what? That one movie
we love you, sir.
That one movie where he played Rachel McAdams.
Oh my god, the hot chick.
The hot chick.
That body swap movie, which is
that was not bad.
Oh, I know which one you're talking about.
It really wasn't that bad.
Anna Faris.
I feel like there should be a separate episode on the decline of Rob Schneider because Everyone can agree there has been at least one movie where they were like, he wasn't that bad.
Deuce Bigelow, he was great in.
Deuce Bigelow is so fucking funny.
I love him in Waterboy. So
the Waterboy. Yeah. Remember the animal, that horror movie where he like he died and like resurrected with animal parts? Yeah, it was horrible. But
I feel like this should be its own, or could be its own.
Judge Dredd, he was like,
I would love to talk about this.
We'll have to do a deep dive on Rob Schneider's career at some point.
He keeps winning the Golden Raspberry, which is like they just give it to the worst actor every year.
I
don't know what foundation owns this award, by the way. It's not the Oscars, but it's
they just live like in the Rob Schneider.
It's like the anti Oscars.
Yeah, yeah.
They live to shit on Adam Sandler and Rob Schneider.
Yeah,
Adam Sandler is a cool dude.
And how I know this, by the way, is because it's listed on his IMDb.
As multi-time Razzie winners?
Yeah. IMDb also has shitty awards that people get, not just great awards, but...
That's impressive. Speaking of funny movies from a long time ago...
Oh, man, great segue.
Let's get to that review.
Funny movie. Boy, you don't like the segue, man? Eric, why are you laughing at... We actually came up with that segue.
It was written down in the lab.
It was not bad. I just wasn't expecting it to be
that ridiculous.
That great.
No, but yes. It's
we'll do an old timey Hollywood transition. We'll even do the.
Why? Thank you, Juan, and welcome to Nostalgia Review with Mooney.
Fraser Crane logging in.
Hey, baby, I hear the blues. I call in dust salads and scrambled eggs. Anyway, so yes.
Now listen, y'all. 40-year-old virgin, 20-year-old movie. Us, but fun ass movie. All right, big start of the Judd Apatow, I think, takeover of comedy.
Yeah,
in Hollywood.
It kind of really. Correct me if I'm wrong, but Judd Apatow did a movie or two before this called Heavyweights.
He did Heavyweights, and he also wrote on Freaks and Geeks, where he met the actors in this.
Yeah. If you guys haven't seen Heavyweights,
incredible.
It's an incredible movie that's on Disney Plus because it's a Disney movie. Yeah. It's a Ben Stiller movie.
It's like White Goodman before White Goodman.
Basically. It's about a bunch of kids who go to fat camp to lose weight, but they end up finding friendship and having fun. But this crazy gym owner, like Ben Stiller, basically his character from Dodgeball.
Yeah, White Goodman. Okay.
Uncle Tony. He takes over the camp and wants everyone to get in shape, and all the kids are like, no, we want to stay fat, man. He's like, all right, cool. So they bully him out of it. But it's such a good movie. And I feel like
Heavyweights.
Watching that is a really good precursor to 40-year-old virgin in the movies that we have now for Judd Apatow, because you're right, it kind of is the start of this huge cult classic that he's become.
It's a big run. Correct me if I'm wrong on some of these. He did Knocked Up.
Knocked Up was
Did he do Superbad?
He did Superbad.
Superbad. He did Pineapple Express.
Pineapple Express was he wrote it, but David Gordon Green directed it, but he did help create.
Did he do Something Somebody Make a Porno?
Exactly. Yes. Make a Porno, yes. Yeah. It was either he produced or wrote on a lot of these
that
movies.
That, I think, was the only one I haven't seen.
Yeah. He did that movie with Adam Sandler, I think. Funny People.
Funny People, and also This Is 40 with Paul Rudd.
Yes, This Is 40.
Did he do Juno?
Juno, he did not do. No, he didn't do Juno. So. But but again, he has an incredible run. His most recent one was The King of Staten Island with Pete Davidson and Bill Burr, who people just forgot was a very great comedic actor.
Very talented actor.
Yeah, but going off, like that movie, 40-year-old version, was the start of the Apatow's like reign in comedy. When you think of comedy in like the mid to late 2000s, Judd Apatow did it, and that's the movie that kind of like put him on the map. And like, I love how
well deserved, by the way, very well deserved.
It's, I think the reason why I wanted to go into this movie, like pick this one in particular, because, you know, again, turning 20, but if you look at the who's who of just who's in this movie and the cast, like it either launched a career or like, yeah, maybe launched a career, like a lot of people in it, like obviously Steve Carell, who was, I think, a year into the American version of The Office by when this came out. He already
quick comment on that. You can very much tell if you watch The Office Season 1 that Steve Carell got great hair, either implants or surgery or something after that Season 1. He was clearly balding. He was clearly having a tough time. By the time he finished being famous after 40-year-old virgin, he comes back on the show. got that nice little coiffed hair, look more professional.
You guys should watch him on the Dana Carvey show. It's only one season, and the show is ridiculous. But it's him and Stephen Colbert and Dana Carvey, and they're very young. There's actually a – sorry, small side tangent. It's like 20 seconds, but there's a documentary on Hulu about the making and the downfall of Dana Carvey show, because it was – he got so popular after SNL, and then the show only lasted a season and got canceled. Very funny, very good. Both are, but –
Dana Carvey was the one that did the turtle movie, right?
Yeah, Master of Disguise.
He's also
the turtle. I know exactly what you're talking about.
He's also one part of the way of Wayne's World.
Garth. Garth. Yeah.
That's funny. You remember him for the turtle. All sides.
I watched that movie a lot as a kid. In my defense,
dude, that movie was horrible. But as a kid,
it was really bad.
Made me laugh so much as a kid.
As a kid, that I'm not turtly enough for a turtle club.
Turtle
killed me as a little kid.
Dude, I liked Mystery Men too.
Mystery Men was amazing.
Mystery Men was a great old movie.
Evolution. I don't know.
Evolution was amazing too. Man, with David Duchovny. David Duchovny and Orlando Brown. That was
with the guy from American Pie, right?
Sean William Scott's in there.
It
was like
it was a Head and Shoulders commercial.
Yes,
it was like Ghostbusters meets Aliens. Yeah.
No, it was Ghostbusters basically meets
good
Aliens.
Good era of movies, man. Yeah, good era of movies.
Wild era of movies.
Early 2000s were, dude.
They were just green lighting everything. And more than half the time, the movies that were good, like when we were growing up in this era, I feel like they wouldn't green light today. They'd be like, no.
Absolutely, they wouldn't. Time.
And I remember watching this, my personal history with the movie. The movie we're talking about again is 40-year-old version, 2005, Judd Apatow movie. 40-year-old version reintroduced me to Michael McDonald, because I didn't know. My family thought Michael McDonald was a black guy. And even up until like I was like early teens. So like when I saw this, I was like, wait. He isn't a black. He's like, no, like, yeah, I'm gonna be there.
They repeatedly play this. They're in the setting is in an electronics store, basically.
Best Buy,
Best Buy ripoff, right?
Circuit City.
From the 90s or late early 2000s. Yeah, Circuit City is a good example, Radio Shack type store. And they just basically have on all the TVs Michael McDonald playing constantly.
It's a really great
whole movie.
No, it's the same song.
Yeah, the same like one concert song. Like it's like a DVD of like when they used to have the. it's fantastic. Man.
Yeah, so Steve Carell and great cast again. Steve Carell, Catherine Keane, Paul Rudd, Rami Malek, Seth Rogen. He plays Andy. Andy Stitzler. He works in this Circuit City ripoff. And one night, he and his friends Seth Rogen, Rami Malek, Paul Rudd, they're playing cards, and they find out that their good friend here, in a hilarious scene where they're like describing like how a boob feels.
It's a very raunchy scene where they're all describing like, "Oh, describe your grossest sex scene."
Oh my god! Yeah.
And they're all describing like wild, gross, like over the top movie shit. Like, wow, like what the fuck are you getting up to, right? And then they're like, "Hey, Steve Carell, Paul Rudd's being a little whiny bitch. So you tell your best story too."
Because Paul Rudd's getting all sentimental about it.
Yeah, he's like his like ex girlfriend from 2 years ago. It's like Mindy Kaling. It turns out. We could go over some of the random. I actually want to go over some of these random background actors.
Kat Dennings.
We have Kat Dennings as a young Kat Dennings. Jane Lynch
is in this.
Paul Rudd. Half the cast of Grown Ups. No, not Grown Ups. The one with Paul Rudd.
Man, Lost Boy. No.
The one with Paul Rudd.
So David Koechner's in this.
The Christopher Mintz Pase or whatever, the guy who did from.
I know. Oh, man.
Role Models.
Role Models.
The guy from American Pie as well.
One of my favorite young cameos is Jonah Hill trying to buy the fucking
boots. Oh my god. Jonah Hill trying to buy these crappy little
boots. It has fish in them. Yeah.
The go-go boots. The little go-go boots. It's very, very young looking. A lot of these guys, you clearly don't recognize them. It's before Hollywood. Like the fame, like they got some, a little bit of trainers, maybe a little bit of Botox injections, a little bit of work done.
One of my favorite scenes ever in a movie, in a comedy movie, was Kevin Hart's cameo where he's arguing with Rami Malek. And like, I didn't know who Kevin Hart was. I was like, who? Again,
he was
like,
a nobody back then.
Yeah, like who is this guy? He made the most out of like a 10-minute. He's like, hey man, so you've done a lot of big words with me. So I don't know what that means. I'm taking the disrespect. Watch Mel coming with the sale.
Bro, that's one of my favorite lines.
You getting both of you getting. He's like, I love how Apatow is able to like he kind of gets criticized for like letting scenes play out a little bit too much, maybe letting
that's
the actors
style,
like
that's
go
style,
riff.
That's
but
his thing.
This was the perfect blend of like, okay, letting them go and like letting them use what's on
the
script.
I mean, there was
the
a couple of those. You know how I know your gay scene?
Yeah,
it's clearly them riffing with each other.
It's incredible amount. I think like Mindy Kaling, we already talked about. That was Paul Rudd's.
Mm-hmm.
Very not much into him, short-term girlfriend.
That's Kelly from The Office, right?
Yes.
Okay. Yes, yeah. Yes, yes.
I've had a hard time liking Coldplay after 40-year-old version.
Oh, man, that's...
Bro, whenever I'm driving, like I always say that instead of honking, I'll be like, get the fuck out of the road, virgin. Like, again, it's like... Like quotes like that baked in, sprinkled into like a really sweet movie.
Putting the pussy on a pedestal.
Oh my god!
Can't put the pussy on a pedestal.
You're making a pussy lie. You're making a thing a big thing you can't defeat. And he's like, yeah, that's what I'm doing. I'm putting the pussy on the pedestal. It's like it's stuff where like it sounded like how like friends would talk to each other, but like done in a way that like it's still
a lot of it is improv. Yes, a lot of them is just the people's talent.
He does it and he has such a style that it makes me look back and think that he did movies that he didn't, like Dodgeball.
Oh,
yes.
Yeah, that
like,
wasn't him.
Like,
yeah,
I look back and think that was a Judd Apatow flick, but it's not.
Yeah, no.
So he has a...
Judd Apatow films tend to be a little more heart and sentimental based as opposed to pure absurdity.
Yeah, there's always a heart to...
right, like 40-year-old virgin, and again, it like tries to tell, like it doesn't go deep into it, but it tells a message about... You know, what this embarrassment can feel like, the shame you can feel like.
How it was looked at back then.
Male
yeah.
friendships, both in a positive and toxic way. Frankly, they're kind of abusive to him for a good chunk of the movie. And
Robbie Malco's character, how he is with his girlfriend cheating on her, how Paul Rudd's with...
Everybody is very shitty to women in this movie repeatedly, except for Steve Carell.
Yeah. Like, and they're telling him, no, here's how you get girls. But you're looking at it like, no, these guys don't even know what they're talking about. Like, yeah, they get girls, but they're not... fulfilled, and like Steve Carell wants to be fulfilled. It's a great kind of duality they have in this movie going on.
Oh, last big, that wasn't, she didn't become as big, but Catherine Keefer was the mom in Get Out.
Yeah, Catherine Keener, yeah, like the one, yeah.
Yeah, she was the one with in the sunken place, to put him in the sunken place.
I'm pretty sure after this movie, him and Leslie Mann got married too.
I thought they were married, I think, hold on, I can actually look this one up.
Paul Rudd and
Judd Apatow and Leslie
Mann.
Yeah. I think they were.
She was in a whole bunch of the movies. She was in Knocked Up. She was in.
Well, they've been married for a while.
You know, they got married in 97. They'd they'd been together. Their daughter's an amazing actress.
That was before Heavyweights.
Yeah. Well,
who is their daughter?
She's in Euphoria. let me see here. Maude Apatow. You've seen Euphoria? She's a great actress. She's in that.
I just don't know.
Yeah, but no. Tell the family.
The girl who's not a piece of shit.
Yeah,
the only girl who you should be friends with.
That's
in that
actually
movie.
A great way to put it, Lexi. Lexi's great character. So but no, it's a really talented family, and this movie really, again, just to harp on just the personal aspect of it, it kind of really formed like what my sense of humor was. Like this and Chappelle Show were what I watched a lot. Like when this came out on DVD, I'm watching it repeatedly. Yeah. And like they really, really kind of like, you know, that irreverent, like, you know, grade school humor, but like done in a really, really well done way, in my opinion. And
he's like a more mature Ned's Declassified.
It feels like he would make an adult version of Ned's Declassified.
That doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
And you do notice, like right now, we mentioned all the actors look like, you know, younger, almost cheaper indie versions of themselves. But the movie itself, right? The lighting, the way it's shot, you can tell it was made on a pretty damn low budget.
It's back when comedies were mid-level comedies.
But here's the thing, like shortly after that, Knocked Up's 2, but then you got Pineapple Express big
Pineapple
budget.
Pineapple Express
coming.
Had money.
Just 3 years later, yeah.
Pineapple Express had money.
And I think in 2005, with this coming out, was like kind of, was a eureka
moment. That was
moment
back
for everyone,
when even Dodgeball looked like it cost a good chunk, you know, with the big stadium.
Yeah.
It
came out a year before.
Like advertisements.
Yeah. It was a year before, but still looked like the budget.
These movies made it seem like, you know, big. They could be trusted with big budget comedies. Like the kind of stuff we don't really see anymore. Original ideas, entirely irreverent, based entirely on the star power of the people involved and the writing and just the chemistry.
of the actors.
But with 40-year-old version, it was kind of weird because Steve Carell wasn't really a star. Like, this was...
None of these people were stars at the time.
It was pure funny was what this movie survived on and what it's remembered for. And yeah. It's really, really amazing how they did that.
When was he on the Jon Stewart show?
Let me see.
It was around that time. It was around, I think it was before The Office.
Okay, because he was a pretty big correspondent.
Daily the Daily Show, right? Yeah.
Yeah, he was before, that was before he got on The Office, I'm pretty sure.
This was the last, 40-year-old Virgin came out the last year he was on The Daily Show.
Because, I mean, he was great on that, too.
I never watched him. I saw him the first time.
I saw him after Colbert started The Colbert Report.
Probably my favorite political show of all time.
Daily Show. I mean, that's a lot of people's favorite political show.
The Colbert Report.
Oh, Colbert Report is hilarious.
Colbert Report is hilarious. So good.
That whole era of comedy, man.
That's the one. I didn't watch a lot of them, but
Comedy Central was a good, like Comedy Central.
Oh, and when they had the, what do you call them, the actual stand-ups at night?
Yep.
Roasts?
They had,
and comedy blend and stuff.
That's when they played good movies like Clerks. And Rats.
That's where I saw the unedited version of Not Another Teen Movie and Basketball.
I'm pretty sure I might have watched Scary Movie on Comedy Central.
Scary Movie 2.
Absolutely. That's how I saw most of them.
Comedy Central used to be
Comedy Central used to be a powerhouse. Yeah. A powerhouse channel.
Yeah. And they've had South Park for forever. It's still going.
Oh, my God. That was what, like, out of everything that was on Comedy Central, it was Futurama and South Park that kept me there.
Yeah, no.
For me, it was Chappelle's Show.
Shows came and went.
In South Park. Yeah.
It was a while where you could watch South Park, then Colbert Report, then Daily Show, like back to back to back.
See, because
that was a great like evening. It was Wednesday evenings.
I feel like in high school, I was one of the only people watching Detroiters at the time.
I love that show. I just watched it
because it's nobody. Recommendation. It was I Think You Should Leave guy's show before he made that.
Oh, okay.
He wrote for SNL and then got out of SNL and made Detroiters with Sam Richardson. And then I don't know what he did in between, but that was such a good show.
It was a fun show.
Oh, my God.
It was a fun show. So anyways, going back to this movie. I think a lot of people have already watched this, right? But basically the friends start trying to get him hooked up with random different girls. That's when he has the incident with Leslie Mann where she drunkenly tries to drive him home.
Man, almost kills him.
Oh, he's like a big time loser nerd. Like, they harp on how big a loser he is.
He has collectibles in the actual plastic.
But he doesn't just have collectibles. Like, his whole apartment is covered with them. He has like video games, like an entire wall of video games.
He has a video game chair.
He drives a bicycle to work. And this becomes like a big deal multiple times where it's like, hey, take me on a date. Oh, I don't have a car, so you have to pick me up. That's why the drunk chick ends up driving him home and almost killing multiple people on the road.
Like, the way the movie sets him up is like, hey, this guy he's kind of a loser. But what I always appreciated was, like, he was okay with it. He was always comfortable in his skin. It's just that one thing about him being a virgin was obviously something that, like, made him comfortable. But for the most part, he was okay with himself and, like, didn't really mind that he was a virgin.
I think he did feel lonely. I think he did have that moment where you kind of saw him doing his hobbies and he realizes, like, you know, on some extent, like, playing video games every once in a while, I like doing little fun nerdy things every once in a while. But when that's all you have going, it's only so much that kind of – it's like it's a type of materialism, right? Like, video games are fun, comics are fun, all this stuff is fun, but you need actual human connection at some point.
That's why I was glad he met Catherine Keener. And another great thing about the movie is, again, their relationship and the arc it takes. I always thought, like, watching it later on, I love that arc. Like, they, two people that, like, you know, don't seem as though they would kind of be compatible, but as it went on, I really bought their relationship growing. And they had great chemistry, the two of them. I always thought that.
The only maybe criticism I have of it is that they have, like, a very quick conflict resolution.
Oh, yeah.
And the actual relationship part of the movie is surprisingly small. It, like, really doesn't kick off at all
until well past the second half of the movie.
Yeah, when you do the whole 30 dates thing and like she doesn't want to, she's like, why do you want to have sex?
That too, even the whole 30 dates thing, it's like 30 minutes of the movie. Yeah. Like it's like fairly quick. There's like big chunk of the movie is him just fucking around with the dudes and them getting up to hijinks, which I love. All the hijinks, like him in the club, him in these different situations, him hitting on Elizabeth Banks. It's all hilarious.
Right? And again, Romany Malco is his friend who's like, you know, trying to be, he's spearheading this whole like venture to get him. It reminded me a little bit of like American Pie, like, hey, we have this pact to get, but like for grown-ups, but like he has this whole thing where he's like, you know, you gotta, I tell you what you need to say. Like, hey, we go to Elizabeth Banks. Well, he says this, but also Seth Rogen says this. Hey, when you go up to her, just ask questions. So he just does a lot of deflecting where like that whole funny scene where Elizabeth Banks is like asking him questions. Like, I don't know, like,
what do you want?
That whole thing. Yeah. Like, it's like kind of making fun of how guys would pick girls up during that time and how it actually worked. And he wasn't expecting it. And again, it's just a really funny way to show just at the time that's what was working for people at the time. So
yeah. No. And again, it is notable that it wasn't just that he didn't have a girlfriend. Like, these dudes weren't really his friends at the beginning of the movie. Like, Seth Rogen and company.
Yeah, they weren't his friends.
Seth Rogen at one point openly tells him, like, hey, I used to think you were a serial killer. And then Steve Carell is like, laughs, and he's like, I'm not joking. Like, he's just like openly.
And it's because, like, they all said the cool shit they did in the weekend, and they're like, hey, what'd you do, Steve Carell? Like, well, I made a egg salad sandwich.
Without the bread.
I just have, it's a whole spiel about how he made too much.
And it's like a 2-minute spiel about how he just made a big egg salad sandwich and then he didn't have any bread.
It's something a serial killer would say, so yeah, good on you, Seth Rogen.
Yeah, it's all kinds of weird shit. They just kind of invite him just because he's like part of the store and they kind of feel bad and they don't have anybody else. But again, they are legitimately, they make fun of him and then rip on him. But they do, in their own way, care and try to help him.
That's what I like, right? They weren't mean.
They do troll on him, but in the way dudes troll on each other,
yeah,
right? Yeah. It wasn't like, hey, you suck, get out of here, what are you doing? Like, they kept continuously trying, in arguably misguided ways.
Yeah, like when Romney Malco tells him, hey man, your dick is my dick, like, he meant that with his whole heart because he cares about him in this way. And I think also there's like, a fascination they all had. Like, imagine if you heard that, it's like, okay, like, nowadays, I think we're more, it's not as, like, crazy or taboo, but back then, it's like, you weren't even seen as a man, kind of, how, like, they kind of wanted to say, but it was said in a funny way, and that whole aspect of, and how they approached it was what made, like, the comedy really, really, like, be timeless, really.
Yeah, no, great scenes, tons and tons of great one-liners. I think we've been over quite a few of them already. Tons of great career starts jumping off in this. Y'all have any last thoughts, criticisms?
Well, like, again, in nostalgia reviews, is just, they're really just a chance for us is to, like, you know, just glaze this movie.
Reminisce, back as the kids say.
You know, it's, I'll say this though, Judd Apatow movies tend to run a bit long, again, because of he lets the actors just do their thing. So yes, this movie did feel as though there were some spaces where we're kind of just doing hilarious scene where he goes to Kat Dennings to the little sex thing, and the guy that plays Tom Dubois, he's there with his son, like Cedric Yarbrough.
That's hilarious.
Yeah, that whole staff sequence is like that, where it's a good 5-minute long sequence. Do we need that? No, but it showed him bonding with Kat. So like,
it does build the characters, the relationships, and again, it's just hilarious.
It's so funny.
The little guy is like, oh, you with your little Jufro thinking you're cool. And then he's like, I tapped that. You have a tiny dick, Seth.
Again, like, that's, I guess if I were to say it, it's like, it runs a little bit long. It's like a 2-hour long movie. Most comedies, there's no rule of thumb for comedies, but I think most comedies should run like 1.5 hours. This one runs a good 2 hours, but it's a fun time.
It's worth it.
The pacing is a bit, you know, iffy, and they do spend a bit of time just like dumping on Carell, just like making him look like a loser a couple times.
To set it up that like when he finally achieves it at the end, it's kind of cool to see him like at the end, like he
absolutely, yeah, it's heartwarming. It's the thing, it's heartwarming. It's the movie's funny, but it also has this heartwarming core.
That
and
dance
I really
number
think,
at the end.
Yeah, the heart dance number where they're all like half post sex when he finally has sex and they're all just dancing in the sun
3 hours later.
Yeah, right.
No, I love the movie. I think my favorite Apatow is still Pineapple Express.
Oh my God, same here. That's
that was favorite. I think his like apex, like everything. He had the big budget, the big actors.
That wasn't him directing, but again, he was part of that. That was again.
Like I think he was a big part of that.
Yeah, So yeah, same here.
Yeah, no, a lot of good movies in his filmography. He's on amazing work.
Yes,
definitely. You definitely don't see too many of these movies. Like maybe there was that movie with Jennifer Lawrence recently.
Oh, the one which helps that kid out. What's it called? No,
it's kind of a similar concept where the kid's a virgin, but he's like a 20-year-old.
Yeah, it actually did pretty.
It did decent.
But stuff like that, where like a raunchy like comedy, where
raunchy comedy pushes the envelope a little bit. Like is fun. You enjoy the characters. Is a little bit of a heart to it. Again, you really don't see too many of those anymore. And they didn't do that well. Like it did all right.
I think it's what it is. They just stopped making money. I think we can still like push the envelope and go there. I think it's just, you know, getting that return on our investment.
It's tricky. A lot of them is like, oh, you're gonna make a comedy. Okay, just put it into a superhero.
Yeah, no hard feelings.
No hard feelings.
Yeah. Folks aren't willing to spend that, you know, $20 million to make that mid range movie because you know they want to get their money back. No one's really going. But
they want a guarantee.
Yeah, but I still think you can. I reject the notion that people say, oh, you can't make a Blazing Saddles today. No, you can. You have talented writers who can do this. Is there an audience for it? That's the question.
Yeah. I do think they're going to have to play kind of close to where horror is, where they go for that low budget, high profit route.
Yeah.
I don't think there's too much market for high budget comedies based on original concepts these days. Like to the point where they can make the money back with all the increased costs and stuff. That's hard to say. Like something like Pineapple Express, which has full on action sequences with explosions and practical effects and all that stuff.
Yeah.
Is you're probably gonna have to go, you know, a little bit more unknown actors, a little bit shooting on scene, like cheap cameras.
So fun fact, Pineapple Express cost $26 million to make. And it made $100 million.
That's insane.
Right? And like but it
to be fair, it's a long time ago, right?
But you see the $26 million on the screen, like they put that to use and all that, and like that's
But nowadays, that movie would similar movie would cost $200 million. So part of the problem.
Same 40-year-old version also cost $26 million.
I feel like
really, that's impressive.
And it made $177 million. But again, this is 2005,
and back then, see part of the thing back then, you know, you enjoyed these movies. They wouldn't necessarily do gangbusters at theaters. Nah. But then you go out and buy the DVD.
I bought Same Pamphlet Express. Like they have a second.
You would absolutely 100%. So you're spending double the money.
Yeah, you doubled
right. So cool every single person who enjoyed that movie in the theaters is basically doubling up with the DVD. That you don't see that anymore.
Yeah.
Right. You just pay the $115 a month for whatever streaming service.
Yeah.
Instead of $13 for that one movie.
I feel like people are. It's kind of coming back now.
Yeah,
people are buying more movies.
Well, I think definitely with like streaming services having whole like catalogs, people aren't actually buying physical copies as much. But
you
know, there's still a market. They're
still purchasing
for that.
Them.
There's still a market for them, especially with streaming services. Sometimes you know being dicks about the way they.
It won't all that, like you know like you won't always have like Jumanji on Stars. It'll go away. But if you have a Jumanji on Blu-ray, like I do, like you have it forever. So, yeah.
Absolutely. No, so wonderful movie. I think we all give it a great rating.
Absolutely.
I think we all really love that movie, both as kids. And even today, it holds up very well.
For all you 40-year-old virgins out there, it's cool. Just be yourself. You'll find
But also person. Make moves. Don't stay at home.
Yes.
Meet people.
Yes.
You know, be bold. You don't have to stop being a nerd. You don't have to change your interest.
You throw away your action figures.
Yeah.
But you do have to put yourself out there and meet people.
That's a great message, That's actually another message of the movie.
Because, Steve Carell still has to grow up and make changes, right? No matter what you want to analyze it as, he does not stay the same character throughout.
Yeah. He sold all of his toys at the end, you know, but to help pay for his wedding. And
not just his wedding, his dream. He was going to open up his own store to basically be a new, smaller Best Buy back when that was a good idea.
Who knows where he's at now?
Right. Yeah, that was back in the day. Yeah. No, great movie, great movie.
Fantastic movie.
All right. So, I think it's time for our one-shot review.
One shot.
One shot, one opportunity. One shot.
one opportunity.
No, we spawned the wheel last week, Eric. We came upon this show from Stars. It was, I think, Action-Adventure.
Action-Adventure.
It was called, a show called Escape at Dannemora. At
Dannemora.
So we watch, if you remember the concept of one shot, basically we watch the first episode, give a quick review to say, you know, did it pass its one shot? Was it worth continuing on? After. Is it an episode we recommend to our viewers? Right? So, a quick overview of the episode before we give our thoughts. Basically, the episode is a prison break episode. Dannemora is a prison. Right? We open on a shot of Patricia Arquette's character. She seems to be the main character, main woman behind this.
Kissing Kate Barlow herself.
Yes. Patricia Arquette, big part in Severance. Shout out to her.
Yeah.
Severance season one. So Patricia Arquette opens up and she's in prison clothes, like the black and white, like cartoon prison clothes.
Sorry, Juan. Speaking of Severance, Juan, I get another shout out to director of this whole series, Ben Stiller, for just killing it.
Ben Stiller is in...
He directed Dannemora.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, what?
Yeah, isn't it great? Yeah, yeah.
That's a trip. I did not realize that. Yes. Very big shout out.
When you said that, I was like, oh, snap. Yeah,
double, Ben double. That's where they met up and linked up so they could work in the future.
Man. He's killing it.
I love Hollywood relationships like that, where you see them working together years later. Yep. You know that personal relationship played a part.
You just knew. Yeah.
So Patricia Arquette opens up. She's in cuffs, prison suit, sitting there freaking out. She does not look like a normal prisoner.
Fantastic way of setting it up, too. I love that. It kind of reminded me of like the first season of True Detective. Kind of like...
Yes. It's that kind of a vibe. That kind of a vibe where it's like, okay, and then the prosecutor comes in. Mm-hmm. It's Bonnie Hunt, if you all remember her, the mom from Cheaper by the Dozen.
Sister of Helen Hunt. Yeah. She was also the love interest in Jumanji.
She was the love interest. Yes, that's the other one.
Yeah, but
those two were her big roles back when we were kids. So it's basically it's a similar setup to what we got going on. A lot of cop shows, right? Prisoner, they're cuffed. In comes the prosecutor.
How do we get here?
Do a deposition and starts giving them the details, trying to butter her up, but also interrogating her in a way, like trying to get her to slip up clearly. And then, boom, we go to the flashback and we go to the actual events, right? So it turns out Patricia Arquette is a worker at the prison, right? At this prison, Dannemora. She works there. She works with the inmates. She works in like the fabric shop, I guess. Yeah. They're doing a tailor shop. And right away, we see actually a couple big names in that tailor shop. One of the big lead actors is Benicio del Toro.
Benny.
I love one of my favorite actors of all time. I think I've enjoyed every performance he's done in any movie.
I still think one of his best performances was in the first Sicario. If you guys need to
see Sicario. He just puts up random great performances. Yeah, like he's great in Snatch. Way of the Gun. If y'all have ever watched Way of the Gun.
Way of the Gun
shootout scenes. One of the most realistic shootout scenes of any Hollywood movie ever. Wow. Watch Way of the Gun. It's a fantastic movie.
Okay.
Kind of reminds you a little bit of old Robert Rodriguez. Yeah. So, and then Paul Dano. Paul Dano is another big actor in there.
I love how Paul Dano's character is last name is Sweat, and he's just a slimy. I always think that Paul Dano is covered.
He got a little like goatee, like very trashy white trash goatee. He looks like he's from a trailer park home. Very much trash. So they're in there. They're like sewing up stuff. And then Patricia Arquette character kind of calls Paul Dano. He's like, hey, I need your help. Paul Dano seems to be kind of the second in command, the main helper. He's still a prisoner, but he seems to be
they're all prisoners, but
like the floor manager
for
the prisoners. And they go into the back room to find some thread or something. And they immediately, Paul Dano and Patricia Arquette, immediately get to fucking. Like, he just drops his pants, immediately, and it's just, pound town.
It felt like old school, again, HBO, hey, we know why you're here, guys. There's,
It's not, glamorous and sexy,
not at
though.
All, yeah.
It's,
not at all.
Not just because they're not particularly attractive, but it just feels like they're hiding. It's, very,
like, okay, we're just doing this real quick.
It's a quickie in prison. So
yeah, it's kind of gross. You feel the awkwardness of like, she's her boss, but he's the dude. And it's like the power dynamics are iffy. So yeah, it goes on like that. We then go back to like her being with her husband. Obviously, it's not a great marriage. Her husband seems like kind of a rural town loser. They seem like they might be in Alaska or something. One of those like up north. It's very snowy.
I think it was Alaska.
It might be Alaska. It's very up north, like Minnesota type thing, right? Small town. They got a heavy accent. And you know, they're just kind of going about their very boring days and stuff.
Wait, no, I'm sorry. Upstate New York.
Upstate New York. Okay.
They didn't really establish that. Again, it's one episode, but like, yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, it's okay. It's upstate New York. But again, like the frigid, like non-nice part of New York.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, at that point, we start developing the relationship of the actual prisoners. Mm-hmm. We get to know more about, Benicio del Toro and Paul Dano, Sweat. Benicio del Toro basically kind of runs the prison a little bit. He's like the main inmate.
And again, this is all done real. It's one episode. Again, you have to capture us. And again, by this point in time, they have only so much time to do this. But they develop that and show us how Benicio's running things. How there's a hierarchy in this, and there's like a whole kind of system that he has.
They do a great job of showing, not telling.
Exactly.
They don't just say, oh, hey, you're the top dog. What do you need, top dog? They have a scene where like a security guard comes up to him. You know, it's still a security guard, but the security guard is clearly being respectful and somewhat deferential and friendly towards him. And then some other guy kind of goes like, hey, I hear you're the guy to ask about this stuff. And Benicio looks at him like, oh, shit. Like the guard has to tell him like, hey, calm down. Like, don't kill this guy. Like, yeah. Be nice. Like, you, fuck off before I, like, you're like, guard even spits in his face and stuff. Guard has actually also been in some other TV shows. I think he's been in House and some other stuff. Okay. I can't remember his name, but he's like bit actor in some other stuff. Okay. I recognize his face at least from a couple of the small roles. But anyways, surprising amount of like famous people in this like random kind of show.
Michael Imperioli apparently is in this show. So
okay. But yeah, at that point, we just kind of go over their prison life. It turns out this guy's a painter. Paul Dano also has kind of an artistic streak, learning to paint. We see their relationship. It's a bit of a slow burn.
A slow burn.
It's just building up the relationship and then building up the relationship between Paul Dano and Patricia Arquette, who clearly Patricia Arquette did something funny. It's now implied that she helped these two guys escape. Part of the questions at the beginning of the deposition were like, did you have a relationship with these men? Did they ever give you gifts? Blah, blah, blah. So, yeah, it just kind of goes on like that. They kind of establish the prison life a little bit.
It does a good job as a first episode. It really does get you in, but also just get you really invested in every one of these characters, just so when it pops off, it like you really feel for them. And like it does a good job, again, of like showing life in this prison.
Oh, so David Morse is the guy I was talking about.
David Morse. Yes. Oh, my God.
Small-time actor.
Hold on. Bad guy, yeah. He was in Gladiator, yeah. He was in the Green Mile. My gosh, he's a guy like you see his face, and you're like, oh, you just DiCaprio pointed him because he's been in all this other stuff. Okay, I remember this guy.
Yeah, no, that's exactly what it looks like. And then Doug, it's actually one funny scene where people start to suspect Paul Dana and Patricia Arquette are up to shit. And then basically a guy at the prison tells the husband, like, hey, there's like a little bit of suspicion, but don't tell her I told you. And then the husband immediately goes up to the wife. So my buddy Paul told me you, like the first thing he said, my buddy Paul says you're like too friendly with this guy. And, you know, they just kind of have a little fight over it.
I want to comment on Ben Stiller's just directing. He does a good job of like, I haven't watched a lot of like, I've watched Severance, but like a little I've seen. Again, reminded me of Dan. They're both totally opposite shows, but like Ben Stiller shows that he has a good way of like kind of balancing. This isn't a comedy. Dunmore is not a comedy, but he's able to handle like, you know, jovial moments and like moments like that require that. But also, he's able to really do a good job of like bringing us in and having us be there in the experience with the characters and like through dialogue and just shot selection. Like he really has a really good like touch and depth. And this is 2018. This is like well before Severance. So like he's really, you can really see Ben Stiller like kind of cementing himself in this. And Dan Moore, again, for this one episode, I think he did a fantastic job directing.
Yeah. No, so overall, it's well acted, well performed.
Yep.
There's some interesting setups. One trippy scene, like the relationship between Paul Dano and Patricia Arquette. Again, the power dynamics are weird, where at one point she wants him, she just kind of like orders him basically, say, hey, come, let's go fuck. And he's like, no, I don't want to do this. And again, it's just like kind of a tense. And then the next time he comes in, and like this is what I always wanted to title this episode. It's the best way I can describe it is they have big titty mommy sex. So she has big old titties, Patricia Arquette, right? And basically while they're having sex, she asks him to start calling him mommy and to like suck on her tits like, you know, like a baby would. And so he had call me mommy and like shit like that. And yeah, while they're having sex. So yeah, they're having big titty mommy sex.
Yeah. Look, I don't know why I was in there, but hey, it is what
it is. It's a trip scene. Actually, I think one, I guess, mystery / hint. She's wearing at one point a shirt that says Air Force Mother.
Oh.
And it seems like her husband and her live alone. It seems to be somewhat hinted that she lost a son.
Okay, I can see that.
I don't think that's definitive, but seemed like between that and that scene, it seems like she lost a son at some point.
I can see that. No, yeah, it definitely will make sense how she's acting, her just decision making, and like it definitely would like allude to that. But
it would allude to it a little bit, and then we end basically with her back in the position scene with the DA asking questions that implies, you know, that clearly she knows something happened. And then Benicio del Toro kind of finds the first hint for how they're going to escape. They found like some tunnel or something.
Yeah, that, and that's it. So
that's pretty much the first episode.
So Juan, I guess the big question would be, would you give this another shot?
You know, honestly, there's a couple of things against it. One, the lighting and the way it's shot. It's a Showtime show from 2018. It feels kind of cheap.
Yeah,
we're spoiled by like that kind of prestige TV lighting. Like, you know what I'm talking about?
White Lotus, you see like there, like on Severance or
Silent. Like high def cameras, just like very fancy lighting, all this stuff.
I will say that it was shot starkly because the location was stark and grim. That's what I'd say.
That's part of it, but you notice it coming off. If you're watching off a lot of modern shows, it looked like it was shot closer to how 40-Year-Old Virgin was shot.
Okay.
I see that. Just a lot of plain shots of just landscape where they are.
The selection wasn't as imaginative or like kind of inventive.
It's not some high level cinematography.
Gotcha.
It feels like an old school cable TV show. But
it did feel
with
like that.
A surprising amount of high level movie actors.
Yeah.
Right. I think that's the biggest selling point. The acting is tremendous.
They do a great job.
And you get curious. I might watch the second episode to see where the story goes. It went very slowly, right? We hadn't even started doing any of the Prison Break stuff.
There's no escape. There's no escape yet from them.
Yeah. Because we already know they're going to escape. So it's going to be tricky to see how we're going to make this interesting for like, what, 6 to 8 episodes?
Yeah, 8 episodes.
It's a mini series. It's a limited series. So it's not going to go on. But yeah, no, that's pretty much the show. What about you, Kosi?
Yeah, I want to repeat what Juan said, but yeah, I definitely enjoyed the actors. Great performances, dialogue also. But yeah, I'm not really that interested in it, but I do applaud the effort. Just because I wouldn't follow through with it doesn't mean like viewers, you guys shouldn't.
It feels like a little bit of a mystery box episode, but it almost feels like too obvious what the mystery is going to be.
Kind of know what they're...
Right. Like maybe at this point, like if they got to the part where she's at the deposition by like episode 3 or 4 and then the rest is trying to capture them, maybe, I don't know.
But they've done a lot of the heavy lifting already, so we're like, okay. Yeah.
So I think, again, I think it would have worked better as a movie.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Than what it's doing. But I guess I could try to watch the rest of the show to find out. Yeah. But yeah, I might at least watch episode 2 to see if it holds my interest.
So I guess it's a no for me and a yeah for Juan on this one shot.
Iffy, yeah.
On this one shot of Escape for...
Not a must watch, but interesting for what it is.
Yep, and that's Escape at Dannemora on
Showtime. Dannemora.
On Showtime. And if you have Paramount Plus, you have Showtime, so you'll be able to watch it on there.
That is correct.
Okay, I think it's time for the plug of the week, Cosey.
Plug of the week. Ah, man, I guess I'll go first. You know, I have a, my plug of the week is, you know, RIP to David Lynch. We unfortunately lost the great director David Lynch. He's done a lot of, when I'd say, like, weird stuff is what I like to call him. He's a weird kind of eye director, but very, very just inventive, has a, has his own voice, unique voice. He did the first Dune 1984 movie. He also did the incredibly successful Twin Peaks, along with like its relaunch. You know, he had a very illustrious career and passed away this week. So yeah, I just want to just give that plug of the week to David Lynch. If you guys are not even familiar with his work or have seen his work, go back and watch any of his movies. I'd say again, just watch Twin Peaks. It's like the one I know him best from. But yeah, it's a huge loss because he's a great, great creator.
Eric, you got one or?
My plug of the week is an anime.
Okay. Ooh.
It's called Mashley Magic and Muscles. It is an anime essentially of Hogwarts. But okay. If Saitama from One Punch Man went there, it's a world where everyone's born with magic, and they have these lines on their face. Everyone is magical, but he was born without magic. He wants to go to school, so he draws lines on his face, and he just fakes it till he makes it. It's like they have a flying lesson with the broom, and everyone can fly, but he just throws his up in the air and jumps on it. But he does it so fast, it looks like he's flying. So he just fakes it, but he's super strong. Very good anime. It was on Crunchyroll, but now it's just dropped on Netflix, so it's way more accessible.
Okay.
The English voice acting is phenomenal, too, so if you're like me and you watch anime while you're eating and you don't want to read all the time, the English voice acting is worth watching as well.
Okay.
So.
Okay.
Ashley Magic and Muscles?
Yes, sir.
All right.
Cool. Ashley Magic and Muscles. Okay, for me, my plug of the week is going to be for a streaming service, actually.
Ooh.
I want to shout out Apple TV Plus.
The whole thing?
The whole thing one.
Dang. Dude.
I absolutely do. One, because...
Did you do that, Cozy?
You know what? I'll allow it.
Wow, bro.
The whole thing, bro. No, listen. One, right now, it's been... Really hasn't been getting that much love, that many subscribers. But their average quality of their shows has been absolutely outstanding, right? They have hit after hit.
They always used to be like this, did they?
Yeah. Well, they've only been around for a few years. So.
Oh, okay.
I mean, you know, post Ted Lasso, I think they've been consistently having good, at least something good going on at any given time.
I remember when they first came on the scene, a lot of like question marks as to what they're going to provide, like in terms of original programming.
Dude, honestly, I thought Apple TV was going to fucking suck. Same I thought here. A lot of these Apple shows were just going
to
be awful.
To be blunt, most season one stuff, morning show was their big jump. Steve Carell, shout out to Steve Carell.
That was a great show.
It was a good show, but it didn't quite hit the heights I think they were expecting, either critically or commercially. It was big. It was a good show, but it wasn't quite like the big hit they
I think
they
Severance was the hit they needed.
Severance, but really Ted Lasso was the big jump off.
Yeah.
Yep.
You can still see Ted Lasso at the top of the list, even though it ended multiple years ago.
Yeah.
And it was a short show. No, but right now, this past weekend on Friday, what do you call it?
Silo
season 2 ended, and Severance season 2 released on the same day. Now, Apple TV does it a little bit different than someone like Netflix and only releases usually one episode at a time. Right, especially for these big shows. Sometimes they'll release two or three. For the most part, for the big shows, they'll release just one every week. And especially because they're very mystery-based, they're very discussion-based, they're water cooler type shows. They haven't become as big as they could be simply because Apple TV, frankly, not everybody has it. Right? Yeah. Not enough people have it.
Yeah.
But Severance is legit, in my opinion, the best show on television.
I would agree.
And going back to Silo, because I'm just such a big fan of Rebecca Ferguson. Is she great in that show? I gotta watch it.
Unbelievable in that show. I won't tell you it's a flawless show because it does drag a little bit with some of the characters and some of the portions. Especially season 2, it dragged a little bit towards the middle.
Robbins is great.
Tim Robbins was incredible.
He's fucking phenomenal. All right.
Rebecca Common is in it.
Nice. Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
No, they
Tim Robbins is fucking tall.
Yeah.
Yeah, like
you he's not a notice. Giant human.
You didn't know that? Yeah.
When you played Andy Dufresne, they did the cameras and they did they had him sit down in different ways. Yeah. So he just seemed like a normal man.
This show he looks
This show they do not fuck around. Freak. They're like, "Hey, no, he's like towers. Oh, like, he makes Tommen look tiny." You know, he just
he's like 5'9".
Tim Robbins is a good 6'3", 6'4".
That was the one unexpected thing about that. Yeah. Tim Robbins is a tall person.
What? The fact that he's that tall plays into his character.
Yeah, okay? He's a very authoritative figure.
Yeah, authoritative, intimidating. And it's partly because he just kind of towers and leers over people. Yeah.
Tim Robbins is a whopping 6'5".
Yes. He's 1 inch shorter than me.
Yeah that's no, crazy. He's massive.
Bro,
that's
crazy.
With the big, broad shoulders.
Yeah.
Dude, I could be Tim Robbins.
You could be Tim Robbins.
I'm already white and tall.
Yeah, you could be Tim Robbins, bro. But no, man. So the finale of Silo and Severance released back-to-back, I watched them both at the same time. It had been a while since I'd had that experience of like two big shows and two big episodes coming out that same night where you're just super hyped for both. And they both totally delivered. The final of Silo set up bigger mysteries, kept you on the edge of the seat. It has me desperate to find out what happens next. And you know what? Same with the Severance premiere.
Dude, this sounds like old school HBO. Like it's like a
HBO television is the closest comparison. Back in the Game of Thrones days where they'd constantly have not too many shows, right? They'd only have a couple shows at any given time. But everything they had was high quality.
Yeah.
Right? Apple TV is basically HBO without that long history. Okay. Right? You can't go back and watch The Wire and The Sopranos and other stuff to kind of mix in with the new stuff. That's really Apple TV's biggest problem. It just does not have a lot of content. Second biggest problem is that his movies, especially for how much money they've been spending on them, have kind of bombed. Right? Even Killers of the Flower Moon, that was a pretty good movie.
Killers did, yeah.
But it did mid at the box office. Napoleon and Argyle did terrible. So they've had a lot of movie bombs. Right? But yeah, no, they're doing great stuff. Watch Severance, best show on TV right now. Silo also great. If you like Fallout, you'll love Silo. Great post-apocalyptic sci-fi. Yeah. I recommend getting on, spending the $10. I think it's worth the money.
All right, thanks for the plug of the week, Juan.
Okay.
And with that, Juan, that's the episode, Juan. Dude, Eric.
Thanks for having me, man. It's been a minute.
Thanks for showing up, bro. Thanks for getting nostalgic with me, guys, as we look back on the 40-year-old virgin. You know, it's 20 years old, and geez, we're...
So it's a 60-year-old virgin.
Now. He's 60-year-old. So Andy, no, but actually, Andy made sure he wasn't a virgin at the end, so good for him. And again, to all you virgins or non-virgins out there, just be yourself and be happy in your own skin and treat people well. But
he's lying to you.
I am.
He's lying to you.
Again, though, this was, you can find us on Spotify under the name It Was Mooney, and I want to thank you guys for listening to us right now. You can also find us on YouTube, you can find us on Instagram, you can find us on Blue Sky, you can find us on Reddit. Juan, we're everywhere. We are...
Not TikTok no more.
TikTok RIP.
TikTok's gone.
It's gone.
We'll see. We'll see if it's truly gone.
Come on, Skip. Come on, Trump.
Come on, Trump.
Anyway, guys, I've been Kosey, and I'm joined always by Wani B and Eric. And until next time, guys, peace.
Adios.